Thank you. Good afternoon. Today I'm going to be talking about a survey of law enforcement forensic evidence processing that RTI has conducted on behalf of NIJ. As Mark mentioned, these findings are preliminary. The final report is currently under peer review with NIJ. And just a quick overview of this, as many of you can imagine, this is not easy information to obtain. Law enforcement agencies, many don't have record management systems that readily allow you to extract information on cases that contain forensic evidence but that never went to the laboratory. And that was really our main goal here. So it was a challenging initiative, but I think we have some results that can hopefully move the field forward, especially as we learn about this issue. Just a little bit about forensic backlogs in general. As many of you know, more evidence is being collected from a forensic perspective than can really be managed at forensic crime laboratories. And most of that information to this point has relied on the laboratory side of things to establish this backlog. In 2002, BJS conducted a census of crime laboratories and reported upwards of 260,000 backlog cases. And an update in 2005 showed that that number in that time period had increased 24%. And those backlogs typically extend across all forms of evidence, including drug chemistry. The sole initiative to look at sort of the other side of the fence of the backlog problem, and those are cases that really never left law enforcement, but that contained some forensic evidence and could have potentially moved forward from an investigative perspective if they were analyzed, was conducted in 2002, an NIJ National Survey of State and Local Law Enforcement Agencies. And that survey estimated that there were 52,000 unsolved homicides and 169,000 unsolved rapes that contained biological evidence, but that were not submitted for analysis to a crime laboratory. An additional 264,000 property cases were estimated to not have gone to the lab as well. So in 2007, RTI was funded by NIJ to conduct the current survey. The current survey was different in that we were focused on all forms of forensic evidence, not just DNA. Our focus, again, though, was on state and local law enforcement that investigated crimes as part of their regular processes. So we excluded, for example, sheriff's offices that only had jurisdiction over courts and jails. Primary objective was to estimate the number of unsolved violent homicide and rape cases and property cases that contained some form of evidence, but that did not go to the crime laboratory. Also the types of forensic evidence associated in these cases for violence, and the capabilities and procedures in law enforcement agencies for processing, submitting, and retaining evidence. It was a national survey, as I mentioned. We used a methodology similar to the LEMIS survey, the BJS LEMIS survey. Our final sample was over 3,000 state and local law enforcement agencies. And we used a multi-mode data collection approach, including web, mail, fax, and telephone follow-up. The nature of the responses, the nature of the questions, didn't really allow for conducting the survey on the phone very easily, so the phone was mainly used to follow up with agencies and discuss any problems they had with submitting the survey. Often the survey required coordination within the law enforcement agency from investigations, crime analysis, research and planning, and property and evidence. We had a very distinguished panel of experts from forensic science, law enforcement, research, some of whom are in the room today, that assisted with the development of the survey instrument and even follow up with specific agencies. And of course, NIJ provided critical guidance and also helped obtaining letters of support, including a letter from the IACP. In terms of response rates, overall, especially with a survey that was challenging for many law enforcement agencies, I think we did pretty well. We had a 73% response rate. Those responses were highest for large agencies, those with 100 more sworn officers, or those with 50 to 99 officers, and lowest for the very small agencies, which is not a surprise considering their often limited resources. Responses were also highest for municipal police departments and lowest for state police agencies. In some cases, state police agencies were challenged because of the decentralized nature of some of their units. We did get a fairly good response rate on the web, which was promising, and by hard copy. Those were really the two primary methods used to respond. We also ran a help desk, so that allowed agencies to contact us if they had problems or to coordinate responses within the agency itself. This is just a screenshot of the public version of the website, which allowed for password control and the ability to track responses over time. So in terms of the results, overall, these are defined as cases, again, that were unsolved, so open cases that had not been closed by arrest or by exceptional means, that contained some form of forensic evidence, but that were never sent to the forensic lab for processing. And we asked about questions over the previous 5 years. The expert panel and others thought that asking within a longer period of time would be extremely challenging for law enforcement agencies to answer and to approximate. So what did the results show? Overall, we estimated for homicides about nearly 4,000 homicides over this period that met that criteria. In other words, about 14% of unsolved cases were never sent to the crime lab for testing. For rapes, about 27,500 cases, or about 18%. And then, of course, for property crimes, because of the sheer volume, more than 5 million. So 23% of unsolved property cases with evidence were never submitted to the crime lab for analysis. So what types of evidence was associated with these cases? Well, for violent crimes, homicide, and rape, about a third involved DNA evidence, which suggests that with additional testing, some proportion of these cases could have moved forward. About 20% involved trace evidence or latent prints, and 18% firearms or tool mark evidence. In terms of agency characteristics, I think some could assume that this is a problem only specific to large agencies. And in fact, large agencies, those over 100 or more sworn, did account for a sizable proportion of the unsolved and unanalyzed homicide cases. But the story was a little bit different for rape. About 6 out of 10 originated with those largest agencies. But smaller agencies did account for a larger proportion of rape cases than for homicides. So I think it's important to understand this and design, if you design policies that don't just allow for resources and perhaps procedural changes to large agencies, but also those smaller agencies. By agency type, municipal police departments accounted for about 4 out of 5 and slightly lower percentages of unsolved rapes. And sheriff's departments accounted for about 18% of both. In terms of state police, about 1 in 10 of backlogged rape cases originated with state police agencies where they had primary jurisdiction. So what were some common factors for not submitting evidence? We asked agencies to list all of these and list the most common or the primary inhibiting factor for not submitting evidence. More than half of agencies indicated they had not submitted evidence because no suspect had been identified. About 3 out of 10 were uncertain where to send the evidence. And some issues also pertain to prosecution, the agency looking for the prosecutor for guidance. About 14% indicated that a suspect had been identified but not formally charged, or an 18% reported that the analysis had not been formally requested by the prosecutor. Laboratory resource and timeliness issues were also cited. An inability of the laboratory to produce timely results, at least in the opinion of the agency, was cited in 13%. Insufficient funding for analysis in 11%. And the fact that the laboratory would not accept evidence due to backlog issues for 8% of the inhibiting factors. We also asked about evidence retention. One issue was, do agencies have a policy for retaining DNA evidence for closed cases? Less than half of agencies reported they had such a policy in place, either because of a state statute or because of an agency-specific guideline. 1 in 5 reported they were unsure if their agency had such a policy. But when a policy did exist, it ultimately fell upon the investigating agency to store and maintain this evidence, 8 out of 10. Law enforcement are also overwhelmingly responsible for retaining evidence for unsolved cases. They were responsible for, in more than 9 out of 10 cases, for storing this evidence on site in a storage location. So what are some implications? One is that, obviously, these data indicate that there are these substantial forensic backlogs continue to exist in law enforcement agencies. Nearly 1 in 7 unsolved homicide cases, 1 in 12 unsolved rape cases, and 1 in 4 property cases were not submitted to a forensic laboratory for analysis. And these backlogs are not limited to only large agencies. They also impact those that are smaller and even the very small agency. One of the things that comes out of this study is the implication that more training, even though substantial training and funding has gone out to agencies to close cases and to move more forensic evidence through the system, more could be done to improve awareness among investigators, law enforcement officials, about the need to rapidly move evidence, including DNA evidence, through the system, including enhanced policies that require submission under many circumstances. Some U.S. law enforcement agencies continue to have the mindset that forensic evidence is beneficial primarily for prosecuting crimes and not as a primary means for developing new leads. And I think some of our presenters will talk a little bit more about that. Another critical finding is that law enforcement information systems need to be enhanced so they can systematically track and monitor forensic evidence in criminal cases. Many of the agencies struggled to respond to this survey for that very reason. And I think agencies have also struggled to really, over time, track how this issue is affecting their agency and what cases need to be moved forward in a timely manner. More than 4 in 10 agencies responding to the survey reported that they had no computerized system in place with this ability. And even those that reported they did, it's unclear really what the capacity of those systems was. More guidelines and resources are also required for evidence processing and retaining evidence in agencies. But these policies must take into account the resources available to law enforcement, both for evidence storage and for reviewing and analyzing cases. As an aside, we also did ask about internal capacity for agencies for non-laboratory staff within law enforcement agencies for things like latent prints. About 4 in 10 reported they had staff that regularly conducted those activities, and about 20% of those reported those staff were currently experiencing a case backlog. So these things are not only affecting information going out of the law enforcement agency and the laboratories, but also the ability of the agency to process evidence internally. The other issue is the ability to improve the ability for police agencies to track and discard evidence that is no longer required and maintained by law. I think this was a critical issue. In many cases, agencies are retaining evidence for long periods of time because really they're unsure what they can safely discard of when, and for that reason, many evidence storage rooms are filled with evidence that may no longer need to be kept. I guess a final implication is just the need to coordinate and develop a prioritization system for getting evidence efficiently through the system. We've heard a lot of, or at least fairly new information about the potential for analyzing property crime cases, but you can see by the sheer volume, 5 million really backlog property cases, that adding those into the system without really some type of prioritization of those could result in further problems. So I think communicating across law enforcement, prosecutors, and laboratories, but also prioritization of cases that need to move through more rapidly is a needed next step. Thank you.